free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
It's Friday, February the 28th, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host, and today we're going to take a look at coronanomics. I think that's the new term that we need to start using here because, folks, that is a very real effect that we're already starting to feel. And again, you know, when you look at the stock market, it's based on media reports, expectations. A lot of these people were looking for a way to dump what they thought, I think, was already an overbought market. And so they can do that without getting charged with market manipulation when they have something like this. But it may be market manipulation. We'll take a look at what's going on with coronanomics. We'll also take a look at the solutions, not only the panic that's out there. And even if the threat is real, we need to beware of the solutions that are being fed to us. I'm reminded of the story about the locusts that are headed towards Pakistan and China and so forth. And we saw like a week and a half ago, the story, and I laughed about it briefly. I said, okay, so we've got a locust swarm. Some of these things are 30 to 40 miles long in an individual swarm. And there's multiple ones of those. They've been estimated to have about 325 billion locusts. And some of these things are several inches long. I mean, these are big bugs. These are not tiny bugs. And so China has a solution, and it first came out in the Chinese paper, and that was reported by a couple of people, but now it's back. Now the story is back a week and a half later. Bloomberg's picked it up. AP has picked it up. And I laughed about it at the time. I said, wait a minute, I thought Asians could do math. If you got 325 billion locusts, each of them several inches long, or a few inches long, I should say, you know, 3 or 4 inches long, and you've got 100,000 ducks, then how many locusts? That's your math question for today, students. How many locusts, large locusts, do each of these ducks have to eat? The answer is 3.25 million locusts apiece. So the locust is a real threat, right? It's just wiping out stuff everywhere. But beware of phony solutions from government and media. Solutions that may be laughable in this particular case, but other solutions that may be very dangerous. We're looking at quarantine as well as vaccine, quote-unquote, solutions that are now being fed to us by people like Rod Rosenstein's sister, who happens to be the vaccine czar at the CDC. No problem, right? So yesterday we saw the Dow plunging again another 1,100 points, bringing its decline from a record high in just the last couple of weeks to now more than 10%, which is officially what a correction is. When you have the market go down 10% from its high, then that is a correction. And it took just 10 sessions, 2 weeks, for the Dow to go into a correction from an all-time high. And it was down more than 11% this week. The S&P 500 has lost 10.8%. You had stocks like Apple, Intel, and Exxon dropping at least 6% each. Some other tech stocks like AMD and NVIDIA fell 7.3%, 5.6% respectively. And so when you look at what's happening around the country, and that's what we're going to look at first, the coronanomics, it is a very real concern because it is this very reaction. And of course, it is a reaction to something that really has happened, and that is a shutdown for whatever reason that the Chinese have done. You know, what they have done in terms of shutting down their industry may or may not be a warranted reaction to the coronavirus. But just like sending 100,000 ducks into an area, there's going to be a lot of excrement that is going to be hitting the fan, no matter how many of these locusts these ducks can eat. So we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Friday, February the 28th, year of our Lord, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host today. We're going to take a look at Coronomics. Is this going to be the pin that bursts the economic bubble, or maybe the vaccine hypodermic? And that's what you really need to be concerned about, the solutions that they're going to be offering to us. Yes, it is a real problem. And economically, it's already hit. But is this being oversold? What are the reactions that we're going to see in terms of quarantine, in terms of vaccines that are likely going to be forced upon us, that they will attempt to do that as well? But let's take a look first at the economic consequences, because yesterday we had the biggest one-day point decline in history. Don't get too upset about that, because even though they're talking about a record point decline, remember how they use these terms. I remember when back in North Carolina, they were increasing the sales tax and going from 6% to 7%. And all the media was saying, don't worry, it's just a penny. It's like, are you kidding me? I mean, how stupid do you think people are? Well, they got away with it, so I guess people are pretty stupid. If you increase it from 6% to 7%, yes, it is a penny per dollar. But we're talking about a 16% increase, almost 17%, one-sixth. About a 17% increase in the sales tax, not a penny. Now, in this particular instance, because the stock market was at a record high just a couple of weeks ago, this has now put us into a correction that amounted to a 4.4% decline in the Dow Jones. And that means that now it is down more than 10%, which is officially what they call a correction. But the question is this going to pop the economic bubble? That was what Gerald Slinty was talking about yesterday when he came on with me. He's been predicting for quite some time that the market is overextended, that the Chinese real estate markets and other aspects of the Chinese economy were showing signs that they were faking it and have been faking it for quite some time. And then we had, I think it's $6 or $7 trillion. Who counts anymore? I mean, you know, what's $1 trillion here, $1 trillion there of paper money that was pumped into the repo market, which you'd never heard of before a couple of months ago. But they did that much in just a couple of months to try to sustain the markets. So as people are looking at this, Euronews is asking, is this going to be the perfect storm for markets? Is this going to pop the bubble that has been created by the central banks and governments? Let's run that report, video clip number three.
How much of a hit have the markets taken?
Yeah, big one, Isabel. You know, the Dow Jones plunged almost 3.5% this morning, which is huge, and they hasn't recovered much since then. The VIX, which is a measure of market volatility, well, that rocketed up 40%. And the virus is really causing an almost perfect storm of economic factors. We've got these big limits on business travel, terrible conditions for tourism. Global supply chains are being dramatically disrupted. And then we've also got major economies, too, that are dependent on China, like Japan and Germany, who are already facing manufacturing and supply chain challenges. So, frankly, it's a case of, you know, too many parts affected, too many days on lockdown, and really just too much uncertainty for the markets not to show the strain.
Okay, and as a result of that, you now see Goldman Sachs saying they see zero earnings growth for U.S. companies this year because of the coronavirus outbreak. Now, the consensus forecast on Wall Street is still for earnings to climb 7% this year. So they are having a dramatic break from that. Bank of America has cut its global growth forecast, the lowest since the last financial crisis. And so the question is this going to be a greater recession, or is it going to be, as Gerald Slinty has warned, a greater depression? Jim Cramer was talking about which sector he thinks is really at risk from the coronavirus. And of course, he singled out travel and leisure, especially airline stocks, as being the ones that are most at risk. And of course, that is true with everybody afraid to travel, afraid to be cooped up in an airplane or even quarantined in a cruise ship. As we've seen, that happen multiple times. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the fact that even though the coronavirus was not present at the time in South Korea, Hyundai had to shut down their giant manufacturing complex because, not really completely shut it down, but they were reducing the number of hours severely. So they're having a big work slowdown at the time because they couldn't get parts out of China. Now that the coronavirus has moved into South Korea itself, they have completely halted production at one of their major plants because they had a worker who tested positive for this. So they've gone from a slowdown because of a lack of parts to an actual shutdown because of the presence of the disease. Meanwhile, we look at the major shipping companies, and the largest shipping company in the world, Møller Mærsk, has warned as of last week, factories in China were currently operating below half-speed capacity. And they said this is paralyzing global supply chains. How is this working? Well, a part of it is you can see this reflected in oil prices. Again, we were talking about that yesterday with Gerald Celente. That has crashed down to $50 a barrel. And you remember when there was the fight with Saudi Arabia trying to take out U.S. Fracking suppliers about 2 years ago. They said, we're going to, you know, take these guys out. Well, they couldn't do that because fracking has such a lower cost than Saudi Arabia does. They need to have oil at $100 a barrel in order to be profitable. And the fracking industry doesn't need it that low. And so they lost that war, but they were starting to come back because they had real wars that they'd started in the Middle East. Nevertheless, it's now down to $50, and the Saudis are not just slashing dissidents anymore. They're now slashing economic expectations. You have China, which is the world's largest oil importer, and with them idling at least half of their plants, they're not bringing in too much oil for energy production. See, they're allowed to use oil. No problem. You don't have, as President Trump pointed out, you don't have Greta going there and shaking her finger at them and saying, how dare you? She doesn't do it to India either. They're allowed to use whatever they want, and they don't even have to use clean coal-burning factories or oil factories. They don't have to clean up their factories. They can keep them as old and as primitive and as dirty as they want, and they can build as many of them as they want. Problem is, they're now idling them, and so they're not using fuel as energy to run their factories, and they are also, there's a because not much is being shipped out, you've got actually stranded oil cargoes off the coast of China. They said it's essentially turned into an oil tanker parking lot in Asian Pacific waters. All these tankers are just sitting there, and they're not offloading anything. On the finished goods sides of it, you've got empty containers, for example, in China. And you've got a shortage of containers in the United States because the manufactured goods are not getting out of China and being transported around the world. So it's affecting all of the supply chain throughout the shipping industry, said the International Chamber of Shipping Secretary. I told that to Reuters on Wednesday. So that's the economic reality of what's going on. And then in addition to that, we have the panic that is being put out. We've got the CDC now and others, and of course the CDC spokesperson, Nancy Messonnier, the director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases at the CDC. In other words, Rod Rosenstein's sister is who this is at the CDC. And she is the vaccine czar. And now she's saying, this is getting really serious. We've got 60 cases in the U.S. And all but one of them, they know, were brought in, people who traveled here from Wuhan, people who were brought in from the Diamond Princess cruise ship outbreak that was quarantined off the coast of Japan. Now, we've had one patient in Northern California, and I guess perhaps that was the thing that panicked the market yesterday. 1,100 points, again, that it collapsed. So we'll be talking about that. We'll talk about the proposals that you really should fear when we come back. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're going to talk about the corona panic that is involving us and surrounding us. And as I said at the top of the hour, when I look at this story that is now being recirculated again, as I tweeted out this morning, I said, so why is this being put out again? Oh, that's right. It's coming from Bloomberg and the Associated Press. It's not the Chinese media this time. It's the Chinese media's handmaids this time that's recirculating this absurd story. Now, look, we understand that the locusts are a real issue. But we've got the Chinese government talking about how they have sent officials with their Zhejiang Provincial Institute of Agricultural Technology. And they are working with a senior researcher at their Academy of Agricultural Science. Oh, that sounds very impressive, doesn't it? Don't be impressed with credentials. As I said, I thought Asians are supposed to be good with math. Okay, so we got this locust swarm. And these are big bugs. And 325 billion of them. But these guys have got a biological weapon, they said. Ducks. Ducks. I want to speak to you about your ducks. It sounds like something out of Brazil. They said they can be more effective than pesticide. One duck is able to eat more than 200 locusts a day. Well, that sounds like a lot because, I mean, these locusts are pretty big. So, but let's just go with that. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. And let's do a little bit of math here, okay? You got 325 billion locusts. That means that each one of these 100,000 ducks has to eat 3.25 million locusts. How long is it going to take one of these biological weapon ducks to eat his quota of 3.25 million locusts? Well, it'll be 16,250 days for him to eat those 3.25 million locusts that he has to eat to be part of, for that 100,000 army to be effective. That'll only take him 44 years. And I think the locusts are moving faster than that. and of course, if these ducks could eat anywhere near that quantity that they would need to eat, then you would have a second excrement hits the fan scenario because it would go through these ducks faster than, you know what, goes through a goose. And this place would, they would be a biological weapon then at that point, wouldn't they? So when you look at the stories coming from the Chinese government, coming from Bloomberg, coming from the establishment media, sometimes you need to do a sanity check on this. It can be a real issue. I mean, this is almost getting to the point where we're talking about a false flag issue. This is panicking. You know, it's not something there. But understand that, you know, when they inflate a, you know, when they inflate something that has happened, or they misattribute it to some other cause, you know, to some enemy that they want to come after, that's the way the government and the media always weaponizes this. So let's take a look at some of the reports that are coming out from the Daily Beast. We see the coronavirus could explode in the U.S. overnight like it did in Italy. The CDC, and again, this is Rod Rosenstein's sister, who is now the vaccine czar at the CDC. These people are saying, well, there's 60 confirmed cases in the U.S., and 14 of them came from people who had traveled to Wuhan, that particular area. Maybe we should call it the Wuhan flu. They flew in with the flu from Wuhan. And the rest of the people were brought back from the Diamond Princess cruise ship. You know, that quarantine disaster that turned into an incubator. And that's one of the things that you need to be concerned about. Because when we look at the solutions, these solutions of quarantine and vaccine are about as nonsensical as the 100,000 ducks to address the locust problem. And then we've got Governor Newsom in California. Said, yeah, we're monitoring 8,400 people for the coronavirus, but we got a shortage of testing kits. We've only got 200 testing kits. But the testing kits from the CDC are going to be exponentially expanded. We got that on a good source. We've been told that. By Rod Rosenstein's sister, the vaccine czar at the CDC. They already had put out some testing kits, but they were such poor quality that they recalled them. And so as reported over the weekend, there were only three states that had any testing kits. And now you've got Saudi Arabia suspending entry for the Hajj. All these pilgrims can't get into Saudi Arabia. I would have thought they would be allowed since they're wearing, half of them, at least the women, are wearing complete head covers, right? Doesn't that count for anything? I mean, you know, they got the women completely covered. Maybe we'll all be dressing like Muslims if the government has its way. Schools are being shut. Travel is being curbed as the world races to fight the coronavirus, reports Reuters. They said for the first time, new infections reported around the world surpassed those in mainland China. Well, assuming that mainland China has been telling us the truth, which we can't really make that assumption, can we? The flu-like disease has emerged because, again, as we look at this story from Reuters, listen to this. So it's exploding outside of mainland China now, where the flu-like disease emerged 2 months ago from an illegal wildlife market. They're still selling that nonsense, that fairy tale. Reuters. they want to call us, they want to call this program fake news. I tell you, it came from bat soup. They're still telling you that nonsense. Tokyo has halted big gatherings and sporting events, but they're still planning to go ahead with the 2020 Olympics because that's a lot of money there. Meanwhile, in the Seattle area, a school that's about 20 miles northeast of Seattle, they closed the entire school after a staffer's family member was placed in quarantine for showing symptoms of possibly having contracted the new virus. You understand how panicked people have become now from the media? Because you've got somebody in the family of somebody who is on the staff who showed symptoms. They haven't tested this. They showed symptoms of this. And so they said, well, we want you to self-quarantine because we don't have any testing kits. The CDC just can't figure out how to do this. Thousands of kits are there in South Korea and so forth. But the CDC just doesn't know how to do that. And they said, we're going to shut down the entire school. Now, the public health officials are saying, we don't want you to do that. Closing schools when there's not been a confirmed case in a student or a staff member is not currently recommended by public health. So there's no confirmed case in either of those. As a matter of fact, they don't have a confirmed case in a family member of a staff member. You know, we go back and we look at the early data, as I pointed out yesterday, from The Lancet. That's the medical journal in the UK. They looked at 99 confirmed cases, they said. So they said that these cases were confirmed. They looked at them from a period of January the 1st to January the 30th. They said of those cases, they had 31 people had been cured and discharged. 11% had died of pneumonia. But they said it looks, and the rest of them were still in the hospital. They said it looks like a viral pneumonia case. And so we'll have to wait and see. But the reality of all this is, how is the government going to react? What are they going to do with quarantines? What are they going to do with vaccines? That's really what we have to look out for. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Stay with us.
Making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
All right, we're talking about the panic, and we got people closing down schools, not traveling, and so forth. And quite frankly, my biggest concern about travel is being snapped up in some kind of a government quarantine. Got to get your shot. Got to take the shot. Remember when President Trump said that about measles? You remember the panic about measles? Oh, we got an infected person who came through LAX, shut it down. We're going to have everybody have to get their measles shots or whatever. I mean, these are the same people. And they've got vaccines in the works, as we see in the news today. But just go back to 2009. Breitbart has a flashback. Joe Biden was spreading panic about the swine flu in 2009. And I want you to look at the difference in the reaction from the politicians and the political class and the federal bureaucracy when he told people, I don't know, you know, those planes, that's pretty dangerous when you find those planes because you're kind of, you know, confined with people there. I don't know if I'd do that or not. And they made him walk that back because they didn't want to panic people. But look at today. They really do want to panic people, don't they? Politico report at the time, an interview on Thursday on NBC's Today Show. Biden, back in 2009, this is the swine flu. Oh, by the way, I had the swine flu, the H1N1. I mean, they said that they tested it. I don't know if they did or not now. I have my doubts, but yeah, I was pretty sick with it. But, you know, it's a flu. I get sick with the flu occasionally. And at the time, I wasn't taking supplements on a regular basis. I got sick with the flu this year because we traveled. Took a plane, went on a cruise ship for our anniversary and so forth, and I wasn't taking my supplements like I always do. You know, when I'm working, I've got a routine. I take all these supplements on a regular basis, but it's a lot of stuff to take with me, and so I didn't take it. And so I came back, and I got sick right away. My wife got sick, and then I got sick as well. But anyway, in an interview Thursday, back in 2009 on NBC's Today Show, Biden said, I would tell members of my family, and I have, I wouldn't go anywhere in confined places right now. It's not that it's going to Mexico. It's that you're in a confined aircraft. When one person sneezes, it goes all the way through the aircraft. That's just me. So from my perspective, what it relates to is mitigation. If you're out in the middle of a field when somebody sneezes, that's one thing. But if you're in a closed aircraft, a closed container, a closed car, a closed classroom, it's a different thing. Less than an hour later, Biden rushed out a statement backing it off. And as Politico said, Biden's remarks contradicted the more restrained advice from Obama and the federal government. So they weren't trying to panic anybody then. The last thing the White House wants to do right now is to shut down the airline industry and big city subways out of mass panic. But that appears to be the first thing they want to do right now. That seems to be what everybody is focusing on. Shut it down. Shut everything. What? Shut down the entire school. I happen to agree with that, but not for that reason. Biden claimed in the Democrat debate this last Tuesday, he said, what we did with Ebola, I was part of making sure that that pandemic didn't get to the U.S., and I saved millions of lives. Well, I'm sorry, but that is also not true. Because they were also not interested in panicking anybody. As a matter of fact, don't you recall when the Ebola thing was happening and they were bringing back people left and right? And we were saying, wait a minute, this is a disease that's got a fatality rate that 60-70% in Africa. People are dying by bleeding out of every orifice. They're bleeding out of their nose, their ears, and everything else. Do we really want to take a risk with that? Why are we bringing people in? And you had a patient that was in Dallas, and you had the local health officials go to that apartment, and this is a health official that was, you know, showing how fearless they were and how strong they were, making public appearances with Obama. I remember very well that Obama went to Dallas and they had that local official, mayor or city councilman or something like that, sitting right next to Obama. And Rick Perry was governor at the time, and he was at that meeting as well. It was a long table, and they had Rick Perry seated all the way down at the other end of the table, like he was, like he was the city councilman or something. So the governor is the way down there, but this other guy, because they wanted to promote that. And this is a guy who did everything except lick the walls to show you. They say there's nothing to worry about here. And so we got an Ebola patient here. See, nobody cares. And he walks in, and he's, you know, going around the place and everything. Then he walks out. There's no quarantining about that. There's no precautions taken about that. No safety equipment, no masks, no nothing at the time. That's the way it was handled when Obama was president. We didn't want to panic anybody when Obama is president, but when Trump is president, we do want to panic everybody. So we look at how effective this has been. A good example of this is the fact that the people who make Corona beer, they've lost, it's cost them $170 million in lost profit just in the first quarter. They said their earnings are going to tumble by about 10%. Let's play video clip number two, where you have ABC trying to explain to people that Corona beer is not the coronavirus. You can't get the coronavirus from Corona beer. Maybe they explained to them it's not a yeast infection. Let's go with video clip number two.
In tonight's Fact or Fiction, we are looking into some confusion people are having about the coronavirus. A story going around today claims that many people think the illness sweeping the globe is connected to Corona the beer. It's true. Google searches have spiked since January the 18th for the terms beer coronavirus, which you see in yellow there, beer virus, which you see in blue, and Corona beer virus, which you see in red. So far, Corona Beer's parent company has yet to comment about this. According to the CDC, the coronavirus gets its name from the crown-like spikes it shows under a microscope. Corona, in Latin, is Latin for crown. Something like that. Like this. I don't know. Latin.
Okay, so I guess we should probably send in the ducks to take care of this. Maybe maybe China can send in the ducks. I guess, you know, when you see this type of thing and you see the nonsense about an army of ducks, maybe that is the literal black swan that we're looking at for the economic situation. The Wisconsin police, meanwhile, in a small Wisconsin town, the Merrill Police Department is encouraging people to turn in their methamphetamines and to have it tested for free to make sure that it is not contaminated with the coronavirus or maybe even Corona beer. Who knows? Locally purchased meth, they said, may be contaminated with the virus. They explained on their Facebook page. Again, they're joking, but maybe some of these methods would probably believe that. I can imagine that they would go for that. They said you can bring it to the local police station and you can have it tested free of charge. If you're not comfortable coming down to the police station, just give us a call and we'll send officers to your home to test as to whether or not your meth has corona in it. And then we get to the quote-unquote reality here. Again, Rod Rosenstein's sister, the CDC vaccine czar, says we're asking the American public to work with us to prepare in the expectation that this could be bad. And yes, I do believe that it could be bad. I do believe that what the CDC has planned for us could be really, really bad. As Reason asks, is it time to panic? Media says yes, but experts say no. For example, Wired Magazine, always a trustworthy source of technology information, right? This will wreak widespread changes in American society. It will usher in the end of affluence politics. And again, Rod Rosenstein's sister, the CDC czar, says disruption to everyday life might be severe. So is it time to panic? Well, one expert, a UCLA epidemiologist, Jeffrey Klausner, said it is possible to say suddenly we will have 20 or 30 cases from one particular place. People should expect that, but people should not be overly concerned about that. If we were testing everyone for the common cold, we would find hundreds of thousands of cases. And he's exactly right. He said death rates may also be inflated if less severe cases of the virus are going unconfirmed. So in other words, if you don't realize how many people have it and you only see the severe cases, you're going to get a higher death rate. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. I was just talking about trying to get a handle on how dangerous this is. And again, we've seen a lot of cases that have arisen, still a very, very small percentage of the population. And, you know, as part of weaponizing viruses and bacteria, which is really what you should be afraid of. You know, that's isn't it the amazing thing that outside of InfoWars, I don't hear anybody calling for the shutdown of the bioweapons programs or even more control and restriction on them. That's not a problem. No, no, no. We're going to have to come up with some vaccines. We're going to have to come up with some quarantine procedures, martial law, got to shut down the economy, got to shut down the schools and travel and so forth. How about we shut down the labs that are creating this kind of stuff, like in North Carolina? I mean, still, no outrage about the fact that North Carolina, 2 years after they said, yeah, we don't want to do this gain of function stuff, where we make something more easily transmitted, you know, more easily spread, which is what we're seeing with the coronavirus, apparently, and to make it more deadly if you get it. this is an ongoing thing, and there's been a lot of accidents in these labs, and there are literally hundreds of them, and they're typically in your own neighborhood. You may not realize it, but if you got a university somewhere around you, you probably have one of these. UNC Chapel Hill, just down the street from where we used to live. And they were working on, guess what? The coronavirus, and combining it with bat genetics from China, creating, as they pointed out at the time, a chimera, and also creating a big controversy because that type of research was supposed to have been shut down by the National Institute of Health in 2013. And in 2015, with funding from the National Institute of Health, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill released their report. And so you had all these scientists going, what the heck is going on here? Why are you doing this? We all agreed this is dangerous, unnecessary, unethical, and now it's illegal and you're still doing it. Well, we decided, we held a review. We decided this is already in there, so we'd go and just go ahead and do it anyway. And I'm telling you that the military is a whole nother ball of wax. I mean, we're talking about the civilian National Institutes of Health, the military and the Pentagon. They don't care about any of this stuff. And they're going to go ahead with that. So that's really what people should be upset about. What we're trying to get a handle on is this something that is we should really be concerned about. Because, again, when you look at the stories that we've seen every year, this is one that just came out the beginning of February in the midst of all this coronavirus stuff. Out of Los Angeles, CBS. Five people sickened in L.A. measles outbreak. Patients visited dozens of West L.A. stores. Panic, shut down, get everybody vaccinated for the measles, right? I've had the measles. Many of you listening have had the measles. Yes, you can have some serious side effects from that. You can die from that. You can die and have serious side effects from the flu, but many of us have had the flu many times and have not died. Many of us have had measles and not died. But many of us have had serious life-altering effects from flu vaccines. That is the vaccine that they've had more successful claims with the vaccine court than any other vaccine. Health officials Wednesday were warning, this is February this year, warning the public about five measles patients who visited dozens of restaurants and stores across West Los Angeles last week while they were contagious. Last month, the health department had issued a warning about measles because of a patient who flew into L.A. International Airport January the 12th, later visited a CVS pharmacy in Brentwood. See, this is sounding exactly like the coronavirus. We've got some stewardess from Seoul, Korea, and she's been flying back and forth to L.A. And now she's sick in South Korea, so we should panic about that. It said in 2019, there were 34 total measles cases. 20 residents and another 14 from visitors who were passing through. And that was just in L.A. Imagine that. Most of the patients were not immunized, said the health department. But guess what? Nobody died. So don't panic about it. Last April, UCLA and Cal State L.A. issued quarantine off orders for hundreds of students and staff who may have been exposed to measles. So they may have been exposed to it, so quarantine them, especially because they hadn't been vaccinated or they couldn't verify that they had been vaccinated. And this is what's dangerous about this coronavirus thing. This is what they are going to be pushing. And so when we look at the statistics, for example, and reason they're saying, you know, you might have the death, this epidemiologist says you might have the death rates inflated because if somebody doesn't show any symptoms or if they have a less severe case of it, or a case that's not confirmed, then that means that you're going to have, you're only going to be looking at the very severe cases of it. It said, for example, in Italy, roughly 3% of the confirmed number of cases ended in death as of Monday. But the number of new cases jumped early Tuesday to 270, bringing the death rate down to 2.6%. In South Korea, the fatality rate so far has been 0.9%. But in Iran, by contrast, it's an astounding 14%. That might be because of the difference in medical treatment. In China, they said no deaths occurred in those who were aged 9 or younger, but in cases of those aged 70 to 79, they had an 8% fatality rate. If you were older than 80, the fatality rate was 15%. So this is what we're looking at here. Let's go to Alex Jones. Alex has a report on the coronavirus. Let's run that report.
Before World War II started, the Japanese Empire had invaded China and taken it over. After that, the globalists that were running America took control of China and have set it up as an engine of global domination and communism. Hitler couldn't even dream to carry out the tyrannies the Chi-Coms have. And now China has launched a crisis with the Wuhan virus worldwide.
They took a coronavirus and they DNA genetically engineered it into a biological weapon known as SARS. And then they supercharged it with DNA genetic engineering to add into SARS, HIV, and the flu virus. And then they gave it these gain-of-function activities. So we're dealing here with some type of biological weapon that we have never encountered before.
I know I harp on this a lot. And it's because at 46 years old, I finally figured it out in the last 5 years. When I was a child, I learned that my intuition, my gut, was never wrong. Now, sometimes my gut was telling me something, and I kind of projected off and picked something else that was a threat. But the threat was always real. Sometimes I would just get distracted onto a threat that wasn't the main issue. So sitting here in the year 2020, and all the incredible things that are happening, I'm just pulling back and reminding listeners that we're all in this together. I personally am storing food. I personally have firearms. I personally am training and know how to use them. I personally believe in being self-sufficient and independent. And of course, then, I sell you things that I think and know you need that will make you more independent and more powerful in our fight together. I see myself connected to you. My common sense tells me what to do. And then I project that out and promote that, and others resonate with it, and I resonate with what you're saying, and we come together. So I feel really good promoting high-quality storable foods and supplements and things that make your immune system better, make you healthy, make you live longer, like X2, X3 iodine, or the Ultimate Turmeric Formula Bodies, or high-quality storable foods. But I just want to remind listeners that Communist China is imploding right now, and they've covered up how deadly this virus is. Are they using it as a political crackdown? I don't know. The fact is, we don't want to end up like their people that are living hand to mouth. We want to be empowered now. We want to be informed, and we want to be able to sit on top of the guns and the ammo and the will to use them to defend ourselves and the food and the communications to move forward in the future. Because being independent and being empowered is absolutely king. So again, don't end up like Communist China and Italy that is now locked down the north with martial law. Be prepared now. Go out, get a firearms training lesson. Go out, buy some storable food. Don't even get it from us. The point is the mindset of thinking about bigger things and not just thinking about yourself and going to work or what you're doing. Thinking about the bigger world and your role in being informed and your role in being involved, that opens up your spirit, opens up all the pathways. It opens up everything that your ancestors did, and that's the larger world. So that's why metaphysically buying storable food or supplements to take care of your body isn't just what you're physically doing, though that pays off. It's about what you're metaphysically doing, making the decision in your mind and your soul to do that. So we're covering it all. We hope this thing planes out and is great, but it looks like it's a big globalist move. And that's why I want to encourage listeners to go to InfoWarsStore.com while we still have storable food ready to ship and get it today and get the other supplements, because we need the patriots that are awake and informed to be as healthy and focused and ready to be leaders in the future with what's coming down. I'm Alex Jones. I want to thank you all. Whatever you do, spread the word about the live broadcast at InfoWars.com/show and band.video.
The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. In this hour, we're going to get into what's happening with the Democrats, because tomorrow will be the South Carolina primary on a Saturday, February the 29th. There's always a leap year when we have presidential elections, and so I guess they're taking advantage of it this year. They're going to have their primary in South Carolina, so we'll take a look at what they're doing. We also have some information about just how bad a deal the Green New Deal is, And we'll also have some updates on some more troubling information about the LGBT pedophile movement, because it continues. It's almost on a daily basis. We get new jurisdictions that are mandating LGBT curriculum to children at a very young age in school. And we have more movies that are portraying abuse of children at a very early age. So we have another one of these disgusting films. And again, you know, when you look at a film festival where you've got a foreign film festival where people are walking out in droves, most of the audience walked out on this other one. A lot of people walked out on the Trouble with Being Born that I talked about a few days ago. But when you go to a film festival, I mean, these are typically people who are part of the industry, and their attitude is typically, give me your best shot. Yeah, I'm not, I mean, the aesthetic has now become shock me, right? I don't want to see something shocking. I've watched so much film that I'm numb now, so I really need to have something that's going to shock me with violence or perversity or whatever. And when you have a situation with those type of people where they get up and walk out, you ought to pay attention. And that's what really makes these people feel good about themselves, the people who produce these films. It's like, look at this. I produced something so disgusting and so shocking that I had my own fellow artists walk out on this. I'm really cutting edge, because that's basically the way their metric now, how offensive they can be. But let's continue on with this coronavirus a little bit, because I wanted to take a look at this particular case in California. It's getting a lot of people freaked out. This is a patient who came in and was very sick at the time the patient came in. It's already intubated and on a ventilator. I don't know the age of this individual. They don't mention that in any of the reports that I've seen yet. And that is a key factor, because as we're going to break, I pointed out that in China, they've said that they haven't had anybody die from the coronavirus age 9 years old or younger. But if you look at the elderly, people in their 70s, they had an 8% fatality rate. People in their 80s, they had a 15% fatality rate, which is typically what we do see with the flu, for example. And as Reason Magazine is asking, is this time to panic? You know, what about containment? Is that a realistic option? The epidemiologists will tell you, unlike the media, that that's not really a good idea. They say the received wisdom is that bans can backfire, for example, by hampering the flow of necessary medical supplies and eroding public trust. And if it's not done correctly, like we saw with the Diamond Princess, it can actually become an incubator. That was far worse. Worst case scenario. So, yeah, if they coop you up and they don't do it carefully with people, they can really spread this around. So now people are asking, well, what about face masks? Because you can't get face masks in most places anymore. Will a face mask really protect you? They say yes, but they qualify it. They said the efficacy is still not 100%, and it's especially a problem, you know, if you've got facial hair, like me. So, shave those beards. I don't think so. I've had this for quite a long time, and it's really grown on me. They say face masks and respirators, of course, aren't going to work really well with these devices. I already know that. I recently went scuba diving for the first time in a very, very long time. I grew up in Florida, used to do it all the time. And I went scuba diving, and just the mustache, the thing leaked like a sieve. But it's okay, they said, if you have goatees and villain mustaches. Maybe I should get a villain mustache. You guys like that look if I go with the villain, the villain mustache? Actually, a villain mustache. I don't know. Yeah, they say I should do it, the crew. I don't think so. Too conservative. No side whiskers, no handlebar mustaches, no beards. We got to panic. It's time to panic. Time to shave. We'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
As I was just saying, they're telling everybody, you got to shave your beard, get a mask. But again, they're only promising it's going to be 80% effective. So it's like, nah, I don't think so. I would rather, from what they're telling us, and I don't know if they know this is true or not, They're saying, oh, don't worry so much about airborne spreading as you do touching things. I mean, you'd probably be better off with disposable rubber gloves if you're worried about catching this particular flu. And again, it's difficult to understand, how this compares to the other flus, because as one epidemiologist was saying, if we were testing everybody for colds or other strains of flu, you would really be panicked and reporting those numbers, because people die from that stuff as well, right? So, when we look at this, though, the Chinese are getting serious. They have removed bat soup from the menu. Remember, they did that right away, that narrative saying, oh, yes, that must be how they got it. It had nothing to do with the research that was going on in their biosafety level 4 lab, combining coronavirus with bats, or the research that was done in North Carolina, combining coronavirus with bats back in 2013 to 2015. Had nothing to do with that. It was bat soup. So they removed that from the menu, and now they are getting even more careful about all this. They're now taking cats and dogs off of the menu. I mean, what are they going to do next? Are they going to even remove fish lips? I mean, that was on the menu when we were in China, fish lips. They have the Yulin Dog Meat Festival. Organizers routinely skin, boil, hang, and cut the limbs off of dogs while still alive, reportedly. They said the festival began in 2010. It occurs every year on the first day of the summer solstice. Those who participate believe that the dog meat cools the body in summer months. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they had dog meat festivals when we were there, but when we went into the village, they had all these dogs that were exactly identical, same breed, tan, kind of medium-sized or whatever, and they were running around the village, and the tour guide told, and they were all exactly the same age. That was the strange thing about it. Fairly young. And the tour guide told us that these are livestock animals. They're going to be eating them later in the year. Every year in China, over 10 million dogs and 4 million cats are eaten for their meat. But now I guess they're getting a little bit more selective. I don't know. Maybe they're going to be shaving their beards as well. In the Vatican, meanwhile, we have a state of panic, as Leo Zagami reports, leozagami.com, as Pope Francis may have contracted the coronavirus. And of course, he's 83 years old. So as I pointed out, people in their 70s in China, people that were 9 or younger, they had no deaths from coronavirus of confirmed patients. People who were in their 70s, 8% of them died. People who were in their 80s, that was 15% of them died. And the Pope is 83. So he's canceled an event as he's taken ill. He was going around meeting people with coronavirus, and now he has met the virus himself. And this is other famous people who have been coming down with it, coming out of Iran. The Iranian deputy health minister, who is the head of Iran's coronavirus task force, tested positive for coronavirus just one day after appearing visibly sick in a press conference. They organized to dispel the idea that they were lying about the scale of the outbreak. Was he saying that they had more or less? I don't know. Former Iranian ambassador to the Vatican, Hadi Khorroshahi, was reported dead today. And the Pope, as you can see, many pictures of him sneezing. He has a cold or the flu or the coronavirus. Who knows? Buttigieg, meanwhile, has canceled plans for two fundraisers scheduled in Palm Beach, citing an unspecified illness. Half of Italy's regions are infected with coronavirus. And the South Korean official in charge of the coronavirus outbreak commits suicide. So when we look at these various reports, schools closing nationwide in Japan, as they're talking about doing that, but they're saying, don't worry, we're not going to shut down the Olympics. Well, we'll see what they do with this. But the thing that I'm really concerned about is the pushing of vaccines. And the news story that is coming out today is the fact that Israeli scientists are saying that they will be coming up with, we have developed a coronavirus vaccine, and they're not the first ones to say that. We've seen several people say they have a vaccine for it, and they're going to be doing testing. And we can only hope that they actually do test it. We don't have a very good record on the big pharmaceutical companies actually doing testing of these vaccines. As a matter of fact, it wasn't that long ago that we were playing the clips from the World Health Organization. They're saying, you know, we got to start testing these vaccines. We're not testing the vaccines and so forth. So I'm not sure they're going to do that. But they're talking about how this is going to be everybody's going to get it, right? 40 to 70% of the people at the very minimum are going to get this. So we're going to have to vaccinate people with this. And that's what I think the end game on this is. I think this is why the media is playing this up. As I pointed out earlier, remember 2009, the H1N1, the swine flu. And they hammered Joe Biden. They said, you're panicking people by saying you shouldn't get in closed rooms or airplanes because they're going to catch the swine flu. And they didn't want to panic people with the Ebola situation. They went out of their way. See, nothing wrong here. I'm hugging and kissing this guy. I'm, you know, rubbing the walls here. No problem in Dallas. But when it comes to this, oh, be afraid. Be very afraid. And we've got some vaccines we're going to have for you. And then this news from Yahoo. Airplanes spread the diseases quickly. So maybe unvaccinated people shouldn't be allowed to fly. Yeah, this is the way this is going to go down. And these are comments that are pushing this from the World Health Organization. Comments from Alex Azar, HHS, saying we cannot hermetically seal off the United States to a virus. And so they said, well, yeah, we can. Let's make sure that you can't go anywhere if you don't get the vaccine. See, that's how this works. It's kind of a de facto quarantine. You know, one way they could do it is the way that they did it in China. They send the military out to the streets with touchless thermometers and scan you to see if you've got a fever. Or send out drones. Remember that? The drones. They send out drones in pairs. One of them with a heat scanner, and the other one presumably connected back to people who are watching what's going on. They say, all right, got you. Go to quarantine. And they probably did have them because they had them with a biometric database. So I guess if you didn't go to quarantine, they would show up with the police to drag you there. But the other way that you can do this is with a soft quarantine, which is what they've been rolling out with measles, right? You're not going to be allowed to go to school if you don't get your measles vaccine. Now they're saying, well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, you're going to have that vaccine before you can go to school. Maybe you're going to have that coronavirus vaccine before you can fly or go to school or go to work or anything. We'll shut you down. You know, show me your vaccine certificate or you're not going to be allowed to work. You're not going to be allowed to travel. You're not going to be allowed to get to school. And if you say, well, show me where this is safe and effective. No, they don't have to show you that, right? They've already established that principle. So now that we have the Israelis saying that they have established this in a few weeks, we'll have this out. You go back and you look at how this is developing, even as you've got people in Kansas City. One person put up a billboard. As a nurse, I was never taught vaccines can kill until my son was a victim. Somebody actually paid for a billboard to do this. Nicholas Catone, September 8th, 2015 to May 12th, 2000. I can't read the date on that. They have a website there, learntherisk.org. As a nurse, I was never taught that vaccines can kill until my son was a victim. Well, I'm telling you right now, that is the biggest risk of the coronavirus, the quarantines and the vaccines, and using vaccines to do a soft quarantine. Yeah, you know, as we look at this billboard in Kansas City, vaccines can kill. A mother, as a nurse, I was never taught that vaccines can kill until my son was a victim. Learntherisk.org. We see this happening many times. Certainly, there was no question at all about it in Samoa, where a mother went in, got an MMR vaccine for her toddler, and the toddler immediately died. Another mother who was there, I mean, immediately died. And like giving the kid cyanide. another mother that was there said, that's it. We're not going to get ours. We're leaving. And they said, no. You got to stay. You got to stay. Forced her to stay, forced the vaccine on the kid, and that second toddler died. At that point, they kind of, pulled back a little bit. And then it went viral in Samoa, and people there just stopped taking MMR. And they said, oh, look at this. We've got an epidemic now of measles, except nobody died with that epidemic of measles because they didn't take the vaccine. And so there's an article from Mercola. Dogs' rights are now exceed human rights. We certainly are more concerned about our pets than we are about our children or about each other. I mean, we don't have anybody out there calling for the eradication of dogs, but we do have people out there calling for the eradication of humans, especially babies. Talked about that UK professor. She's an antinatalist. We've got to stop having kids. I'm not saying we ought to just, line up people who are already here and start killing them, but let's not have any more people. Let's just let the human race die off. No babies. Let's have abortions and so forth so we can have the human race die off. But nobody's saying that about dogs or cats. But Delaware is the first state that's going to allow titers to be given in lieu of rabies vaccines for certain dogs, cats, and ferrets. Even ferrets. Are treated with more respect than baby humans. The Delaware bill, called Maggie's Vaccine Protection Act, House Bill 214, initiated by a businessman who lost his Shih Tzu, Maggie, due to over-vaccination. Over-vaccination. You mean they just kept giving this dog more and more shots like they do the kids? I mean, look at this. We had like two or three shots decades ago. Now it's hundreds that they have to get in order to go to school. As Mercola says, in the case of livestock, discussions are underway into whether or not to vaccinate very young calves, as many factors influence the outcome. And so they're looking into individual circumstances. They say we should consider this on individual circumstances. But at the meantime, when you look at California and northeastern states, no, we don't care what your doctor says. As a matter of fact, a doctor says that you had an incident before, right after you were vaccinated, and so maybe we shouldn't do this again because maybe in your particular case, you're not handling this well. Oh, no. We'll start to investigate that doctor. We'll take that doctor's license. We'll come after that doctor. First, do no harm doesn't apply anymore to medical ethics for humans, but it does for livestock. What does that tell you? I've told you many times that if the government can withhold medical treatment from you that you wish to take, and we can talk about medical marijuana, but I think even a greater example of this, which nobody talks about except on this program because it affects my family, and that is stem cells, your own stem cells. You can't have your own stem cells removed from your body fat, put in a, they put a hypodermic in, and instead of injecting something, they remove a little bit of body fat. They put it in a centrifuge. They get stem cells, and then they treat you with those concentrated stem cells, and it's very effective. And because of money, you're not allowed to do that. Trump's FDA has shut that down because he has absolutely no respect for individual liberty, none whatsoever. It's all about the money. It's all about protecting the herd or whatever. I mean, there's no argument that can be made to explain this other than to say that you are protecting this for big pharmaceutical companies who hope to patent stem cells taken from aborted babies. That's why they don't want you to use your own stem cells. The FDA has never claimed before that it had power to regulate biologics, let alone biologics from your own body. This is a less involved procedure than in vitro fertilization. Where you take sperm and egg from a mother and father donor and you combine it in vitro in a glass and then take the fertilized egg and implant it back in the mother. That's a far more complicated procedure, and the FDA has never claimed that it has regulation of that. There are state regulations about the people who perform these types of procedures and making sure the clinics are clean and that type of thing. But they don't claim to say categorically, you can't do that because we haven't said that you can, which is what they're doing with stem cells. So when a government can come in and say, you can't have medical treatment that you want, but medical treatment that you don't want we will force upon you. And I've said over and over again, if you allow them to do that, you are nothing more than livestock. Livestock to these people. And yet you're not their preferred form of livestock. They perform livestock. They prefer livestock like calves, pets like dogs, cats, and ferrets. They are respected more than you and your children because they want you dead. So why can state legislators, asked Mercola, why can state legislators recognize the risks of applying a one-size-fits-all vaccine mandate to pets? Why can they question that, but then overlook the same risks when applying vaccine mandates and scheduling mandates to humans? The same common-sense approach that is sometimes afforded to animals in terms of evaluating individual circumstances when choosing whether or not to vaccinate are not typically given to humans. So we will protect dogs from over-vaccination, but not the human babies. Meanwhile, President Xi has, in China, has written a thank you note to Bill Gates for helping with the virus. This is reported by Bloomberg. Chinese President Xi Jinping expressed his sincere gratitude to Bill and Melinda Gates for their foundation support to China after the outbreak of the coronavirus. They thanked them for their generous support, said, quote, "Unity and cooperation is the most powerful weapon. And thank you, Gates Foundation, for coordinating with Chinese agencies on the ground." What did they do? What did they do with that? You know, we look at the disrespect for humans and for children, and we look at the concern that we all have as to, you know, will we be treated like the Chinese do in terms of a hard quarantine, just grabbing and kidnapping people and throwing them into a FEMA camp? Or will they do it as they have started to do it with the measles vaccines, a soft quarantine? You can't go to school, and you've got people already saying you're not going to let people fly on a plane unless they've been vaccinated. So, you know, travel restrictions, job restrictions, education restrictions will be a soft kind of quarantine like that. You know, you look at what's happening with CPS, they can do anything, right, in this country. Nobody cares what they're doing to American kids. Nobody pays any attention. There's a case in Norway, an American mother whose son was kidnapped by the Norwegian government back in 2013. Why? Well, she had traveled to America with her child, who was young at the time. They came back from holiday. The police and CPS knocked on the door. They said, "We want to take your son to the doctor's office." Instead of taking him to the local doctor that he had already seen many times, they took him to one 45 miles away, found he was a half pound underweight with a slight vitamin B12 deficiency, and they stole him. Even changed his name. She can't even find out where he is in the system. That's what governments do.
Liberty, it's your move. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Tomorrow is the Democrat primary in South Carolina. And as we look at the amount of money that's being spent on this, as of 2 days ago, as a matter of fact, Bloomberg, about $400 million. Steyer, about $145 million. Bernie Sanders, about $20 million. Trump, about $17. And then it goes down from there. It's absolutely astounding to look at how much money is being poured into this, but not if you understand how much power there is in Washington. It is a giant magnet of corruption. You know, influence in order to be able to do your business in Washington. I mean, that's why Bezos, they all start with B, isn't that funny? Anyway, that's why Bezos bought the Washington Post. He could leverage that. I mean, it was only $250 million. That's a much wiser investment. I don't know that Bloomberg's going to get anything out of his $400 million worth of TV ads. He's gotten a place in the polls, but I don't think he's really got that much support from people. And, you know, because do you really believe these polls? I don't know. But when you look at Bezos, what he's able to do is with $250 million, he buys the Washington Post, and then he can use that to attack his political enemies and to lavish praise on his friends, who then give him lucrative government contracts and, you know, pretty much make him either the sole provider of drone delivery or one of only two or three people who are allowed to do drones, because only they are responsible to use drones. And so everybody else will be banned from it. But, you know, he will be one of the two or three people that are allowed to do that. So it's very effective to do that type of thing. Bloomberg, on the other hand, is using his $400 million and total presidential ad spending is approaching $900 million. But $400 of that is coming from Bloomberg. And again, as I pointed out before, when you look at what the total amount that was spent in 1996, it was $100 million by both presidential candidates and both parties, the DNC and the RNC, over the entire cycle, $100 million. Already, you've got the two billionaires in this race on the Democrat side, Bloomberg spending nearly $377 million, and Steyer spending $145 million. Even Steyer, and he's getting nothing for this. Bloomberg, on the other hand, seems to be thinking that he is buying the Democrat Party. As a matter of fact, he made that statement on the debate that they had this week, Tuesday night. He was talking about how he bought the Democrat majority for Nancy Pelosi. Are you happy with that? Do you like what he's bought for you? Is it a good idea that people like Bloomberg and Soros should be buying politicians, that they should be forcing their agenda of climate change and gun confiscation and other issues down our throats with their money? Because that's really what's happening. Just understand, these politicians really are for sale. And this is the contempt that we see from these billionaires. They believe that they have, that they're entitled to buy this. You know, it was a put down that President Trump did with Hillary Clinton when he said, yeah, she was at my wedding. I paid her to be there. But that's basically what Bloomberg is saying about all of these Democrats, the entire field. Let's play the clip from Tuesday night's debate, video clip number 4.
All of the new Democrats that came in, put Nancy Pelosi in charge and gave the Congress the ability to control this president, I got them.
Yeah, bought off politicians. As H.L. Mencken said, an election is an advanced auction of stolen goods, and he's ready to loot the Treasury. And the only reason that that's happening, and the only reason that we're seeing this kind of explosion in this, is because we've seen so much more power go to Washington. And the more power you get, the more it becomes like a black hole. And I think that's why I have absolutely no confidence that we're going to pull this out by doing anything in Washington other than cutting that monster, that cancer, off of us. Because once it gets to a certain point, once it gets to a critical mass, it just starts drawing everything in at an ever-increasing rate. And that's what we're seeing with the money. Just think of the money as a metric for how much power and corruption there is in Washington when we tell Washington that we want to get our problems solved there. And, you know, the sad thing about it is that even conservatives who want less government believe they're going to get less government by electing the right people to go to Washington. That's not going to happen. You're going to have to take it back. Liberty is never given. It is only taken. And we got to take it back from the people who stole it from us. And I don't know how much he's getting for his money. I mean, there's a report that they had a Bloomberg rally in Bentonville, Arkansas, and they had a massive line of 8 people lined up at this rally in a very, very small venue. I mean, this is not the fact that it's early. This is not going to hold that many people in this rally. And that's really more what you would expect to see from a typical politician. Most of the time, people don't show up. It's very unusual that you get large crowds to show up like they do for President Trump or even Bernie. He doesn't get as big of crowds as President Trump, but he is getting crowds. And that should be something that concerns us as we look forward. But before we move away from Bloomberg, the fact that he has evidently sought Andrew Yang's backing, as reported by the Wall Street Journal, and that Bloomberg may have floated a vice presidential slot to this guy. I think they're quite a good match for each other. I said when Andrew Yang was still running, first of all, he has an elitist technocratic take on the world. Anybody who pushes UBI, and that was his central premise, he was loved by Elon Musk, Mr. Technocrat himself. Remember, it was his grandfather, Joshua Haldeman, who had created a technocracy organization in Canada and was even tried for treason in Canada. He beat the rap, but he beat it out of Canada and went to South Africa. That's why Elon Musk is from South Africa. Basically run out of town on a rail for trying to overthrow their government and institute a technocracy back in the 1930s. And so Andrew Yang was supported by Elon Musk because both of these guys like the universal basic income. They are neo-Marxists. They're not just elitists. They are neo-Marxists, as George Gilder points out. The people in Silicon Valley believe, just like Karl Marx did, that we have an infinite supply of manufactured goods. That's what Marx thought during the Industrial Revolution. Well, you know, with the Industrial Revolution, everybody can have as much as they want. We just have to figure out how we're going to distribute it, and we'll do that politically. And that's exactly the idea behind these people in Silicon Valley. We have to just distribute this, make sure that you don't get too much of it, but enough to keep you from pulling out the guillotines, as Bloomberg said. And when you go back at those offensive quotes from Bloomberg where he was dumping on farmers, he was talking about the fact that we have a progression from an agrarian society, which she simplified to a ridiculous extent. And then so we moved on from that to an industrial society. And again, that didn't take anything to work in an industrial society. No intelligence. But now we're in the information technology. And that's being run by smart people like me, was what Bloomberg was saying. And smart people like me, the whole purpose of the information technology is to replace people with software and artificial intelligence. But then we got to find a way to keep them from putting us into the guillotines. That's what he said. I mean, that is more offensive than any of his arrogance towards farmers. Because it's not just farmers that he has absolute contempt for. And that's basically what Andrew Yang is saying, too, by pushing this universal basic income. And just like Bloomberg, Andrew Yang has a program for every little detail of your life. He's got more little programs than Elizabeth Warren does. And so the two of them are a perfect match. They're going to tell you everything to do in your life. And then we have Bloomberg, even though, you know, he's very old. So that's another thing. You'd want to go with somebody that's kind of young, like Andrew Yang. He's just now released his new heart health information from his doctor, and I didn't even know that he had a new heart. He could use one. I didn't even know, as a matter of fact, that he had a heart to start with. Now he's got a new heart? We'll be right back. Stay with us. It looks like the GOP may force the House to vote on condemning Sanders' communist remarks. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy is preparing a procedural vote that condemns Bernie Sanders' praise of purported accomplishments by communist regimes. And he asked, do they stand with Bernie or do they stand for freedom? And he had also tweeted, Stalin doubled literacy in the Soviet Union, even as he murdered tens of millions of people. Apologists for dictatorships like Cuba, Russia, and Saudi Arabia always say they do some bad things and some good things. That was tweeted out by Tom Malinowski of New Jersey. He weighed in to say that, you know, he doubled literacy rates even as he murdered people. But, you know, we have good and bad. And so what the Republicans are saying was, well, if you say that, well, there's the good and then there's the bad, and that makes them no different than us, right? We got good things and bad things. You know, Stalin, you know, he did some bad things. He murdered tens of millions of people. But, hey, you know, they're no worse than we are. As a matter of fact, they're better because they got better schools. That's exactly what they're saying. We're not murdering tens of millions of people. We're not like the Soviet Union. We are better than the Soviet Union. That's not what they're teaching in school, however. When we go through and we look at the an op-ed piece on the Federalist from Kataya Sedgwick, and she grew up in the Soviet Union, and so she knows something about what it was like. She said, the literacy programs arose really only after the death of Stalin. So they didn't even get the literacy. They just got the iron fist is really what they got. Historians trace them back to the underground circulation of the 1957 Nobel Prize winning novel Dr. Zhivago by Boris Pasternak. And that was a film that made a great impression on me because, again, that was made, I guess it came out in the early 60s, mid-60s or something like that. My wife didn't watch that. Karen said when she saw it, she said, I don't like that movie. It's all based on an illicit affair and adultery. I didn't see any of that when I was a kid. That just all went over my head. All the relationships with, Laura and all this other, I didn't even pay attention to that. I was focused on what the communists were doing. I can never forget that scene. It made such a big impression on me when he goes back home and the big home that he had as a doctor from a wealthy family had been completely taken over by the Communist Party and they'd been relegated to a small corner of the attic. And the attitude of the little apparatchik who was running the show, coming up to him with a chip on his shoulder, just hoping that Zhivago would say something out of line to him. And he was just very cordial and deferential, not giving him any excuse to take any action. Oh, thank you. That's very generous of you to let us have a corner of the attic. Thank you so much. Oh. And then he just keeps watching him as he's going up the stair. And he says, your attitude has been noted, comrade. I'm like, what did I do? Right? And that really made an impression on me. That somebody like Bernie Sanders could come in and take everything that you've got. That they could come in and take your home and your lifestyle, and they could relegate you to a small corner of a public building like they plan to do with smart cities and the Green New Deal. They're very explicit about this. This is the United Nations talking about this. And you've got all of the cities working on doing that very same thing. Taking away your property, taking away your liberty, taking away your food. Telling you how and how you're going to live, where you're going to go, and when you're going to go. That is being seriously talked about in this country. And so you have other people weighing in on it. You have political commentator Ana Navarro said, I was in second grade when the Sandinistas came to power in Nicaragua. And that was another group of people that Bernie Sanders loved quite a bit. He had so many positive things to say about the Sandinistas. Again, he liked the fact that they had poetry. And that was one of the things he was praising about them when all of that was happening in Nicaragua. That's why I called him 2016 cycle. I called him Bernie Sandinista. Anyway, Ana Navarro says they adopted the Cuban education model in Nicaragua. The books, the curriculum that they taught ideological indoctrination. Children had to recite communist, revolutionary, anti-American slogans. That's how the communists teach people to read and write. That's why they teach people to read and write. It is an act of propagandizing people. It is an act of control. Yes, of course they do. They do give you health care and they do give you education on their terms. And both of them are means of control. Everything that the Democrats give you for free is used as a tool of control. And as this writer here, again, it was an article from Katya Sedgwick on the Federalist. She said she grew up in Russia. She said a safer way to access information in Russia was through shortwave radio. You know, you could get the books that were published underground, like Dr. Zhivago, or books that were published abroad, and they actually had a term for that, tamizdat, or something that was, quote, published over there. But if you wanted to get information safely, you could do it through a shortwave radio. She said the sclerotic Soviet state prided itself on manufacturing copious amounts of shortwave radios. Ostensibly, it was for them to beam in patriotic programming and propaganda to their own people. But two can play at that game. And that's why you had the rise of Voice of America, Voice of Europe, the BBC, and so forth, to give them a different approach. Possession of a radio set was not a crime. You know, like they could come bushed into your house and find that you got a copy of Dr. Zhivago, haul you off to the gulag. No, you had a radio set. That was not a crime. Words came out. They just dissipated into the air. Untraceable. And so that's why it's very important, folks, for you to support us. the words that we have on radio. And again, you know, we put the stuff out free to air. We don't get any money from the broadcasts on radio or TV. It's free to air. And we put the stuff on band.video. It's free for you to watch. What supports this program is what we sell at InfoWarsStore.com. And right now is a very important time for you to prepare for your family's health and for supplies. I mean, all you have to do, and I talked about this at the very beginning. I said, look, all you have to do is tell people a snowstorm was coming in North Carolina. They would get one snowstorm that would last for 1 or 2 days max, typically, once every 1 or 2 years where we lived. And if the weatherman came out and said, we think it's going to be snow, whether there was snow or not, all the shelves emptied. But, of course, that was only for a day or two. And you knew it was going to come back. You don't know what's going to happen if it's a hurricane. You don't know what's going to happen with the coronavirus. So you want to make sure that you're prepared. You want to make sure that your body is in as good a physical condition as it can be, because that's going to make a big difference. And any kind of cold, flu, virus, any kind of coronavirus, now you don't know how deadly this is. I pointed out it's not so deadly for young children, but it was pretty deadly for people who are in their 70s and 80s. 8% of the people died in their 70s, and 15% of the people died in their 80s. So I don't have any information about younger demographics, but it skews to people who are not in great physical condition. So make sure that you're in good physical condition. Make sure you've got access to water. Make sure you have a gravity feed water filter. One of the first things we sold at InfoWarsStore.com. We have the Alexa Pure Water Filtration System Gravity Feed. We also have our storable food. And right now, you should be able to get your order in 3 weeks. It's getting longer every day in terms of supply. And other suppliers are not even able to ship. I mean, you just saw the story that we had about what was happening in Costco. My wife had to go to Costco yesterday. She was saying it was a madhouse. She was able to get a couple of things that she needed, regular household items. But the panic can cause products to be taken off. And the government is really going overboard with this and doing everything they can to panic people. We never saw this kind of panic when it was Ebola. And Ebola, like I said, we're looking at rates that are being reported that sound like it's the flu. The Lancet said that this sounds like it's the flu. And yet, look at how they're pushing this. That doesn't mean that if it is just another strain of the flu, that you won't be affected. I mean, think about the fact that they're using this way. That alone scares me about quarantine and about vaccines. So I want to make sure that I am not going to be held hostage to that type of thing. That's why we have storable food. That's why you can get storable food at InfoWarsStore.com and other products that are going to help to support your health and to help fight virus and bacteria. Our NanoSilver products, very effective at doing that. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're going to have Richard Proctor joining us in this hour. He's going to be joining us not in the next segment, but the one after that. And then we'll have him on for 3 segments of the program. We'll be talking about the Constitution. We'll be talking about socialism and liberty. So let's start by talking about the First Amendment, because we've had some important decision coming down the last day or so. This is the lawsuit that was filed by Prager University against YouTube because of YouTube censorship. They did to Prager University the same thing they did to me, to InfoWars, to Alex Jones, just shutting their channel down. And, you know, they appeal this to the court. And now we have the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in a unanimous opinion saying that YouTube cannot be sued under the First Amendment for decisions that they make about content moderation. And Reason Magazine came back and said, oh, look at this. What a surprise. The court rules that YouTube is not the government. Well, you know, the bottom line is, I guess that depends on whether or not you believe, and I think really, in one sense, what it is fraud. Because YouTube and Twitter have repeatedly said that they are a free speech platform. That is their business model. So going back to the court decisions, going back to 1946, we had Marsh versus Alabama. You had a woman who was handing out religious tracts in the public square of a company-owned town. And the company that owned the town said, you can't do that. Get out of here. And they threw her out. So she sued. It went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said, no, even if the public square is privately owned, then they still have to support free speech. Now, in the case of the internet companies, you've had Twitter and Google repeatedly say they are the public square. That is their business model. And so this is a company town, and their business model is the public square. Where it got muddied was we had in subsequent decades, we had some court cases where people were doing that type of thing in malls, and they said, no, you can't do that in malls. Well, see, the business model of a mall is not the public square. The business model of a mall is to have a lot of different retail stores there. And so you're basically then going into somebody's retail store and using that, you know, setting up your soapbox and handing stuff out. It's a completely different thing than if it's the public square. And so the business model of these internet companies is the public square. I disagree with Reason. I've said that many times. I disagree with these conservatives. And let me just say to you, you know, when you look at this, we've had, and I just talked about how the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, the ninth one, it's always been the ninth circus. They had a favorable ruling to conservatives earlier this week. But I said, it is folly to think that we're going to accept judicial supremacy and that we're going to really get this turned around because we've got Republicans in office, because it's going to be changed immediately when the Democrats get back in, because they don't support any kind of freedom. And the purpose of government, if we go back to the Declaration of Independence, is to protect our individual rights. But what we're seeing in the 20th century is that the government and private corporations, big private corporations, are partnering together to rob us in every single way. Go back just a few years to the Supreme Court decision, Kello and in Connecticut, where they said that a town could take property from one private owner and give it to another private owner because, you know, they were bigger and better liked by the government there. It wasn't because they were taking it for public use, not because they were taking it to build a bridge or a road or something like that. No, it was going to be used by another private individual for that type of thing. This is one of the reasons why I say I'm not a conservative. I don't support the status quo. I support liberty. And that's what this country was founded on. We created a government to protect people from stealing from us. And these people are stealing our free speech. And this is an established tactic that they've used to keep third parties out of debates. Oh, we're going to run the debates by a private corporate, and then they're going to decide that you're not in.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. It's now official. The Ninth Circuit Court has said that the internet is the private property of the Silicon Valley oligarchs, the technocrats of Silicon Valley. They've been handed this by the government, by the courts, and they can do whatever they wish. As you see, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals throwing out Prager University saying, you know, YouTube has told us, just like Facebook has told us, just like Twitter's, we're the public square. And yet they purchase off of this after we've invested a lot of money. You know, you had the triple amputee veteran who had been enticed by Facebook to run $300,000 worth of ads, and then they didn't like his political views. They just threw him off, even though they say they're the public square. And even though we've had in the past the Supreme Court saying, well, even if the public square is privately owned, it's still the public square. That is their business model. And the internet is today's public square. But now the appeals court says, no, you can't have that. And you got libertarian organizations and like Reason. You got conservative ones, the biggest conservative think tank, Heritage, the biggest libertarian think tank, Cato Institute. They all say, yeah, that's fine. The courts say that. That's the way that it is. You know, the court said back in 1917, They said that movies, films don't have any First Amendment rights. So we can censor you. They took a director who did a movie about the spirit of 76, about the American Revolution, because they wanted to get in the war on the side of the British. They didn't like what he was having to say about the British. So they threw him in jail. They fined him, gave him a massive fine. And the Supreme Court didn't recognize the fact that movies had First Amendment protections until the 1950s. So I guess the liberals are just fine with private companies coming around and confiscating material that they don't like. I mean, the real problem I have with this as well is that under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, they carved out an exception for these people, because where they typically put censorship in is when you start to get into areas where you're coming after children. But now there's no censorship in that at all, right? And so they said, look, you are a platform. You're not going to be held responsible for what the people put out there. So this is their personal preference. They say we're the digital public square, and our personal preference is that we don't have your voice there because we don't like your politics. They don't have to take it down. They have protection under Section 230. They choose to do it, just like Reddit has now purged the largest pro-Trump community, the Donald. The largest, one of the most influential hubs of pro-Trump activity on the web, over 790,000 subscribed Reddit users, and they took it down. Well, it's not surprising. I mean, we had millions of subscribers on InfoWars channel on YouTube, and they shot that down. Took me down without any warning, without any explanation. I understand they don't like my politics. They don't like what I tell you about what Google is doing, so they take that down. Now let's go to the Second Amendment. Mike Bloomberg says that having a gun in your home puts you at risk. Yes, it does. It really does. It puts you in risk of people like Mike Bloomberg. People who will red flag you, people who will stop and frisk you, people who will use a SWAT team to raid you, and you might be shot by the police. Yes, it puts you in a great deal of risk if you have a tyrant, a little tyrant like him. For example, in South Carolina, in Myrtle Beach, you had a man just awarded $11.25 million. And this is on top of a previous award that he got of $2.75 million from some other government agencies, the Drug Enforcement Task Force that was there, the 15th Circuit Court solicitor, and other parties had already given him almost $3 million in 2018. He just got another $11 million. Why? Well, he was raided based on informants. They said, well, we bought some marijuana from this guy. So they show up. They do a no-knock raid. They did not identify themselves. They bust in, and he pulls up a gun, even though he didn't shoot anybody. You know, he's somebody, a bunch of people breaking down his door. He grabs his gun. He was shot 9 times by officers who fired 57 shots at him. 57 shots at him. It's amazing that he's not killed, but he was paralyzed. An informant said that they'd bought a small amount of marijuana from him, so that warranted them coming in with enough officers to shoot at him 57 times, shoot him 9 times, and paralyze him. Now, they said that they had knocked, that they had identified themselves as police officers and so forth, but video showed otherwise. Meanwhile, we have in New Mexico, we have the governor saying to sheriffs there, enforce the law or resign. New Mexico Governor Michelle Grisham signed a red flag gun bill Tuesday. She said it will allow them to have the surrender of firearms. They'll give you a notification. If you don't do it, they'll come after you, just like they did this guy for a small amount of marijuana. And we've already had individuals killed by the police doing that very thing. She was flanked by advocates for stricter gun control and supportive law enforcement officials at the signing ceremony. However, the sheriffs from the rural areas have opposed the bill in committee hearings. They say it is a violation of constitutional guarantees to due process. It is. It's a violation of free speech. It is. And a violation to the right to keep and bear arms. And it is. The sheriffs, she said, should have the opportunity to oppose the policy change, but she said they cannot enforce it. Oh, really? We have DACA, where you had the Homeland Security director at the time saying, I'm not going to enforce immigration law. It's called nullification. It's called separation of powers. And so she says, well, I think you ought to resign if you're not going to enforce my new law. Well, I think she ought to resign if she's not going to obey the Constitution. And that's what some of the sheriffs are saying. The New Mexico Sheriff's Association president said the new law goes too far. potentially impounding guns before any crime is committed, that he and other sheriffs will assert their discretion over its enforcement. We don't work for the governor. We don't work for the legislature. We work for the people that elected us into office. He is exactly right. Meanwhile, we have Joe Biden, as people have said, he might need a cognitive test. I think he does. I think he needs an education at the very least. Let's play video clip number 5, where Joe Biden says the founding fathers didn't want everyone to own a gun. Video clip 5.
In the South, Second Amendment is a right that is held dear. How do you propose to sell your gun reform ideas to those who either own a gun or feel strongly about protecting Second Amendment rights?
Two reasons. Number one, you're a law student. I taught constitutional law for a long time. I taught the Second Amendment. And here's the deal.
Constitutional Amendment
from the beginning. Yes. No amendment is absolute. None of you can stand up in the First Amendment of free speech and yell fire here. You'll be arrested because you're going to cause damage and danger. From the very beginning, the founders said not everyone is able to have a gun and you can't have any weapon you want. That's simply never been the case. There are limitations.
It's always been the case.
I happen to have a 12-gauge shotgun and a 20-gauge shotgun because I haven't done it for a long time, but I skeet shoot. And I'm not very good at it, I might add. But I have...
Probably as bad as he is at reading the Constitution.
They bird hunt. And they haven't in a while. I lost one. Anyway, they used to bird hunt. The point of the matter is that from the very beginning, you're not allowed to have any weapon you want. And those who say the tree
Absolute
of liberty
nonsense.
Is watered with the blood of patriots, you need an F-15 with Hellfire missiles in order to take on the government. This idea that you're going to need an AR-15
so he'd use
the
Hellfire missiles against
weapon,
Thomas Jefferson.
Or you need any clip that has 100 rounds in it, is absolutely bizarre. You're a danger to yourself.
Okay, let's we're going to take you out of the military. Well, you know, Thomas Jefferson, who said that about the tree of liberty, watered with the blood of patriots. He said, no free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms. Thomas Jefferson also said, I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery, because that's exactly what you'll get with people like Joe Biden in office. Joe Biden hates the Declaration of Independence. He hates the whole idea of natural law. He thinks everything should be a privilege, as you just heard there. We can't. Yeah, guns, of course, yeah, but we're going to tell you which guns you can have. You can have a, you know, bird shot for your shotgun. I like shotguns, he says, all right? Thomas Jefferson also said, what country can preserve its liberties if its rulers are not warned from time to time that their people preserve the spirit of resistance? Let them take arms. That's everybody. And that's exactly what this is about. See, this is about mutually assured destruction, just like we had nuclear weapons for both the U.S. and the USSR. It was about saying this is madness if you're going to start a war like this. And it is madness that the Democrats keep talking about doing this type of thing. Because it will be suicidal for them and for us. We don't want to see that happen, but these people do. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Richard Proctor about this very thing. Stay with us. Welcome back. Joining us now is Dr. Richard Proctor. And, of course, you find him at bathroomeconomics.com. He has economics books there. Bathroom Economics is the book. But then he's also written books on the Constitution, Saving the Constitution, a detailed analysis of the Constitution, bit by bit, as well as one written for children that you can use to teach children about the Constitution, if we can keep it. And you may have people asking, how in the world did somebody like Bernie Sanders get to the position that he's in? And the one-word answer to that is ignorance. Of course, you could also, I guess, throw in envy and greed because that's what's driving this. But if people really understood where communism leads, they would not go this route. And if they really understood the beauty of the design of the Constitution, they wouldn't be so eager to throw it away, and they wouldn't let people like Joe Biden deceive us about it, would they, Richard? Thank you for joining us, by the way. Do we have Richard on the line, don't we? Hey, Richard, are you there? Hey. Okay, hang on. Okay, we're going to call him back. I think the line just dropped on it. We were talking about Joe Biden as we get him on the line. You know, he was saying the founding fathers did not want everyone to have a gun. No, actually, that is a lie. You know, they were coming for the state-of-the-art military weapons at Concord and Lexington, including cannons, Joe, cannons. And there's the same thing was done by Santa Ana. You know, if you look at the come and take it flag, yeah, people put the AR-15 on the come and take it flag now. But at the time of Santa Ana, people at Goliad put a cannon on there and said, come and take the cannon. Come and take it. Not an AR-15. It was a military weapon. As a matter of fact, if you go back to James Madison, who was working on the Bill of Rights, he wanted to have a Bill of Rights. You know, the argument from Alexander Hamilton was, well, let's not put in a Second Amendment. Because everybody understands that that's a basic human right to be able to defend yourself and how important the militia is. He says, if we put that in, then you know the danger of a Bill of Rights, argued Alexander Hamilton, was that they will assume that if it's not expressly put in there, that they have the power to do it. That's why when you know Madison and the others put in the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, they made it clear that if they didn't expressly give the permission to do that, then the government could not assume that. And so they made that very clear with that. But he made it very clear. He wrote the Second Amendment. This sounds very much like the Second Amendment, but this is when they were in the process of writing it. He said, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? A well-regulated militia composed of the body of the people trained to arms. Now, that's not what is in the Second Amendment, but that's exactly what the Second Amendment means. He says, is the best and most natural defense of a free country. So all this talk about the fact that we shouldn't have military weapons and the threat that you hear from people like Joe Biden, Eric Swalwell, Beto O'Rourke, and others that they will use the military against the people of the United States, that should get us all up in arms. And I think we've got Richard Proctor now back with us. Richard, are you there?
Yes. Same thing.
Okay,
happened.
Great.
The same thing that happened to a month ago. Same happened today.
Oh, well, there you go. I mean, the... somebody's paying attention that you're on the program.
Yes,
but let's talk about that since we have we now have candidates who are openly rewriting history, trying to throw out massive chunks of the Constitution who, as we've seen in the past, Joe Biden had absolute contempt for the idea of natural rights. And he tried to get Clarence Thomas stopped because he was furious that Clarence Thomas had written about natural rights. These are the kinds of and he is the moderate. You know, the other person who's leading him is Bernie Sanders, the communist. I mean, how did we get to this kind of position?
Oh, my, because we have, as the people, don't pay attention to what's going on in our nation. That's why we're to that position.
Yeah,
I mean,
agree.
It's quite simple. And socialism.
Yeah, talk a little bit about socialism.
Well, you know, let's go back. Clear back to the Declaration of Independence. When we have it right there, it says, inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, what does liberty mean? Very important. What is liberty? It's the right to do with yourself what you want. And your part of yourself is your person, your thoughts, your ideas, your goals, your plans. That's a part of your person. That's a part of your liberty.
Yes.
Then we go to the Constitution. We go right to the Constitution in the preamble. And it says much the same thing, because remember, the Constitution is just a format to put the Declaration of Independence in operation.
Mm-hmm.
There we are, to form a more perfect union, to establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, and secure the blessings of, I paraphrased there a little, and secure the blessings of liberty. Now again, liberty. What is liberty? Well, liberty is just simply being able to do with you what you want to do with you. That's liberty. So what has that got to do with socialism? Guys, socialism, in its form, is geared to take over you. Now, what
That's
do
right.
I mean? Go ahead. What do I mean by that comment, take over you? Well, let's go back to John Maynard Keynes. He's taught, in Keynesian economics, he taught that capitalism would never do full employment. And we need full employment. Everybody should have a job. So we need to have socialism. That will get full employment. Well, socialism doesn't either until the government takes over and forces you to work at their command. That's what socialism eventually becomes. It doesn't start there. It starts with just little nibbles. Oh, let's have the government pay for one thing. Just one thing. Oh, somebody's had a catastrophe somewhere. Let's help them. Just one thing. And then with the nose and the temp flap, it just grows and grows until we have somebody who says, let's have health care provided by the government. Oh, won't that be great? Everybody can have health care. There won't be anybody uninsured. That was the goal. We have more people uninsured now than we had then. And on top of that, since we have socialism controlled by government, government decides who gets care. And they do have death panels. And they That's do right. decide whether or not you're able to, you're worth having any care. Older people don't get care. They're not worth it. Younger people.
Oh, Bloomberg has already said that. He actually came out and explicitly played the clip.
Yeah.
Where he's talking to people and he says, you know, let's have this conversation. Most people don't want to say this, but I will say it because he doesn't really care what people think about him, I guess. He knows better than everybody else. Because let's say that you're an elderly man, you got prostate cancer. We're going to say, well, sorry, we can't do anything for you.
Yes,
and that's exactly the way it's going to be. And it's going to go from that. You know, when they hand out something that's free to you, then before you know it, after they become the sole provider, and that's what these people are talking about, making the government the sole provider, they will decide and they will have the sole decision as to who gets health care. And they will exclude you because of your age, whether you're too old or too young or whatever. And then they will take a look at your condition, make an evaluation about what they think is your quality of life. We've already seen that with Terry Schiavo. But we're already seeing in the U.K., they're saying, well, if you come in and you have a hateful speech towards somebody, we will remove your health care. You know, if you say to somebody, wait, are you a man or a woman? Sorry, you don't get any health care. We don't give hateful people like you any health care. Well, then the next step is they don't give people that they disagree with politically any health care, because we've seen how that plays out with the denial of free speech. We've got to take a break, and we're going to be right back with Richard Proctor. Bathroomeconomics.com. Stay with us, Richard, and we'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. We started looking at some quotes from founding fathers because we had Biden telling us that they didn't want everyone to own a gun. Well, no, they said exactly the opposite. And, you know, well, he wasn't a founding father, but William Pitt, who was a prime minister of England at the time the Americans were trying to get their independence. As a matter of fact, the town I used to live in was named after him because he was friendly to the Americans. And he had this to say. He said, necessity is the plea for every infringement of human freedom. It is the argument of tyrants, and it is the belief of slaves. That's exactly what slaves believe that. It's necessary for you to take away my freedom, and the tyrants will always come in, or today we call them socialists or communists. And Richard is our guest, Richard Proctor. And Richard, I want to have you put on your economics professor's hat, because you've also written books on economics. Talk to us a little bit about the necessity of socialism, why people are pushing that forward, and why that has been sold to kids in the schools.
Okay, well, let's just go back to what socialism actually does. Let's start at that point and then move along. Again, this is in my bathroom economics book, this story is, but everybody doesn't have it, so I'll just tell you this story. It turns out that there's a class, an economics class, but that doesn't really matter, any class. This class insisted that socialism worked. I mean, it works. No one would be poor. No one would be rich. A perfect society. And so this professor finally said, okay, we will have an experiment in this class on socialism. That means that all grades will be averaged and everyone will receive the same grade. No one would fail. No one would be ahead of the others. Everybody would be the same, just like in socialism. Well, they had a test. You know, at the end of a few weeks, they had a test. Everybody got a B. The students who studied, they were upset because they usually got A's. The ones who didn't study at all were tickled to death because they got a B. Then the second test rolled around. Now the students who worked hard, they looked a little, looked around. They said, well, we're not going to study that hard. We're going to get the same grade as they get. So they didn't study so hard. So the grades on the second one were a D, and nobody was happy. And the third test rolled around. Everybody got an F. And the reason they all got an F, because everybody was blaming everybody else. This is why, I mean, they bickered and they carried on, name-calling. You're not doing your part. Nobody's doing their part. Because everyone figured out that if they worked hard, they still wouldn't get any benefit from their success. So they quit. Everybody quit. Everybody right. failed.
That's what they used to say in the Soviet Union. They pretend to pay us and we pretend to work.
That's exactly right. Here you have an instance now. People say, well, capitalism, capital free and all that kind of stuff, is selfish. It's all based upon what I want for myself. That's just selfish. We want to have what we want to have, and to heck with you, I'm going to get what I can get. Now, that's the definition of the people who want socialism, because everybody who wants capitalism is selfish. They just mm-hmm. want themselves. They won't help anybody. They just want for themselves. Well, let's look at this for a minute. Selfishness. Selfishness really just means that I am going to do the best I can for myself. Yes. And you can do the best you can for yourself. And if everybody does the best they can for themselves, the best that they can do, everything will work, because everybody wants to do something different. And since they mm-hmm. all want to do something different, they do it, and then they get benefits. Now, if I come up with a better mousetrap, and everybody beats the path to my door, I'll sell lots of mousetraps, and I'll be tickled to death, like the guy who figured out how to make a weed whacker. I mean, he sat around and says, you know, if you have a string that hits it cuts the grass. So he mm-hmm. put together a motor, and that thing sold like hotcakes, and he made a fortune. Well, he was entitled to it, because look what he did for the people in the business of cutting weeds. Now, that's social. That's capitalism as its best.
But Obama and AOC and Bernie Sanders would say, you didn't build that weed eater.
Yeah, that's we built that weed eater. they would say that. Exactly. Well,
the whole thing is that they allocate resources to everybody the same, but you wind up not having anything, because, as you're pointing out, when people are acting in their own self-interest, you know, even a business, when it's out there, I mean, their goal may be to make to maximize their profits. But how do they do that? Well, they do that by serving people, right?
Yes.
You create a better product, or you do a better job of serving somebody, and they will come back to you, and you will be able to do more business with them. So it actually makes you more responsive to them. Whereas you look at a communist system, or a socialist system, where they have no incentive. You look at the Department of Motor Vehicles. They have no incentive to do a better job or to serve you or to have any more people go through in a faster period of time. And basically, they get more and more burly about their attitude and slower in terms of their service, because there's no penalty if they give you bad service. So one of them is built on coercion. You must come here, you must come to the DMV, or you must go to the government for your health care. The other one is based on persuasion and, you know, trying to offer people a better service or a better product. So it's pretty obvious what's going on. But, you know, your illustration, Richard, of a classroom, you know, the classrooms everybody can see what the system looks like if they compare North Korea to South Korea. I mean, we don't have the comparison anymore between East and West Germany, but we still have North and South Korea. The same people, this exact same people, they came from the exact same cultural background, had the exact same genetics and everything, but the only difference is the political systems, and we can see the radical difference between those two systems right there.
Right underneath, I have the Constitution on my wall right in front of me. Right underneath that, I have a little saying. Think about it. If the facts, which you were just talking about with North and South Korea, don't confirm to your beliefs, which these people want to have socialism, you won't accept them. You won't accept the facts. If the facts don't confirm your beliefs, you won't accept them.
Yeah.
And that's the problem in schools. They're taught socialism. They're taught mm-hmm. how grand it would be, how great it would be. Now, here we in Salt Lake, we have a university here, highly thought of. And a lot of people go there, and a lot of people learn socialism. I was driving down the street in Salt Lake, up in the area where the students live, and there was a big sign on a window, "End Capitalism." There it was, bigger than life.
Yeah. That's right.
And I wondered, now, what does that person really mean? Does he want to really? What does end capitalism mean? Does that mean we want to close all the stores that sell something because they make some money? Okay, mm-hmm. Do we want to do that? First, we got to know what we're talking about. Are we talking about items, you know, items that are things you want, or are you talking about items that are convenience? For example, if I wanted to end capitalism, you have to start somewhere. Let's just assume we started 100 years ago. Let's just assume we started then. We could start today, that same outcome. If you don't have capitalism, you don't have groups of people creating things. For example, we wouldn't have the telephone system that we have today, that mine doesn't seem to work all the time. We wouldn't have that phone system because nobody could get together a group of people to create the phones. Everybody likes their cereal or Cheerios. Can't do it without capitalism because it takes lots of infrastructure to do it. Infrastructure is capitalism. So if we're going to end capitalism, we got to know what we're going to end. What we're going to end is all our conveniences. That person won't even have the paper to write the sign on to put in the window. In fact, they wouldn't have the window in the house because all she would be living in, I think it was a she, I hope it wasn't, all she would be living in would be a hut of sticks because mm-hmm. there's nobody to build bricks, nobody to make homes, nobody to make glass. I mean, glass is a huge operation. Wouldn't have anybody make glass, wouldn't have any of these things. Capitalism creates these things. Socialism takes the things that capitalism has created and pretends like it's going to improve on them. Well, it destroys them.
That's right. It's kind of like, I remember the old illustration, what was it, Leonard Reed, the pencil, talking about how all these people operating their own interests had come up with all the different components used to make a pencil. How did this come into being, you know?
Yep.
It's exactly right. And we're going to be right back with Richard Proctor. We've got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking to Richard Proctor, and I guess the question is, are we going to go back to the future? Is our future going to be going backwards? Let me put it that way. Are we going to go back to socialism of the 20th century? Or are we going to go back to liberty that was at the founding of this country? We're going to go one way or the other, I think. I don't think we're going to stay where we are. We're going to be moving one way or the other. But in the last segment, Richard Proctor was talking about a college student there in conservative Salt Lake City, Utah, had a sign up in the window, end capitalism. And, you know, Richard, when I look at this, we often talk about cradle-to-grave socialism, right? It's going to take care of everybody from cradle to grave. These students have been so pampered living at the expense of other people. I used to refer to college as cradle-to-grad socialism. You know, once they graduate and get in the real world, then it ends. Assuming that they don't go back into work for the government or for the school system, then they never get out of that mindset. And that's a big part of the problem. You know, these people who, from a very early age, are taught about socialism and how evil America is, when they live in that system where they don't have to provide services and please other people. It's just, you know, they are there as a student. And then once they graduate, they become a provider of that. And again, they're not answerable to anybody. And so it just is kind of a downward spiral of these people who never get out of the system. They become educators and they make the next generation even worse than they were because a lot of these people don't graduate out of socialism.
That's right. Now, you know, when you get into the area you're talking about, students were raised by their parents. They lived in a home. Parents provided, everything was really good. Then they went to college. Now they need, how do we get the money? Well, we go borrow. So they borrow the money under a government program, and now they have the government feeding them, taking care of them. Now when they get out, they're stuck with a massive $30,000, $100,000 school debt.
Oh, yeah. There was a viral video of some young girl who just graduated college, and she had some useless degree that was like basket weaving or something. It wasn't basket weaving, but you get the idea. And she had a sign saying, I'm $250,000 in debt. Go so-and-so. You know, she was behind one of these candidates who promises they're going to eradicate her student debt that got her a degree that is totally worthless. And she thinks that she deserves that, and she wants that. And so
that's obviously the mindset. You just mentioned that's the mindset.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, and for our point of view right now, how we're living, what's happening, you know, we've become the biggest government in history. I mean, our government is huge. It's just monster. It's supposed to be limited. Constitution says they're only supposed to do those things in Section 8 and a few other things listed throughout the document. But they're getting into everything. Everything, business, everything, healthcare now. Oh, my. You know, we talk about this new disease, okay? I have trouble saying the word, but this new disease we're all stuck with now.
And the coronavirus or socialism?
Yeah, that's the one I'm trying to say. That's it. Coronavirus. Here we go.
Well, socialism is actually the old disease, and it's going viral at the same time. And I think it's more dangerous. I said that the other day. I think socialism and communism we've had a relapse, and they're far more viral and far more dangerous, I think.
Well, you look at what's going on now. It's setting the stage for government control.
Yes.
Well, aren't they putting people in isolation? Aren't they telling people they can't go here, you can't go there? That's the words we get from China that they're doing. Well, that's common in China, but it's not common here. But this is a setting the stage. Now, if the disease is accurate or not, I don't know. But I do know this. The government will use any crisis to further its own stuff. And
that's right.
If they see a way they can control us through this disease, they will.
I'm more worried, as I said, about the quarantine and vaccine being forced upon us than any disease that's coming out of, even if it's engineered in a laboratory, because we know that quarantine and vaccine are engineered tools to take us down. But let's give people some arguments that they can use to defend freedom that we call capitalism or free markets. You know, there's a practical standpoint when we look at this, and I think there's also a human nature. But just talk about, we talked a little bit about the practical standpoint as to, you know, the fact that people are producing something that they're answerable to their customers for, which is something you don't have with socialism and central planning, right?
A
bureaucracy is not
right?
answerable to us.
Right, that's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just, practical things that someone could say. I walk up to people, these kinds of things, and we're on this subject, and I say, well, you know, I think I'm going to develop a widget. Now, this widget, everybody's going to want this widget, and that's a good thing. But since we're in a socialism society, I've got to give the widget to you for free. How many widgets do you think I'll make?
Yeah.
Now, if we're not in a socialist society, we're in a society of allowing me to benefit from what I do, how many widgets do you think I'll make? Everybody wants them. How many will I make?
Mm-hmm.
You take a simple thing like the hula things. I can't remember the name. Anyway, you know, when you get 90, you can't remember things. But but I just lost you guys again.
No, we're still here.
Oh, good.
We're still here. Look at it. Yeah, now we're looking at it from the producer's standpoint. Let's look at it from the consumer standpoint.
When
you talk to these people who are Democrats, they always are talking about democracy and voting and all this other kind of stuff. I like to say to them, in a democracy that you're talking about, you get to vote once every 2 years, and then you vote for something, and it's a mixed bag, and you're going to get some things out of that politician you like and some things you don't like. That's always the case it's going to be. And many times the politician will tell you, I'm going to do X, and he does Y when he gets elected, right?
Yeah.
Whereas when you vote in a marketplace, you get exactly what you choose. You may not choose the right thing, but the next time you get a chance to choose it again, and you're making multiple votes per day.
That's right. Absolutely.
Right.
That's how the marketplace works. That's what free enterprise is. You choose what you want. I don't care what George produces. If I don't want it, I'm not going to buy it.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I don't care who produces it. As long as I want it, I'm going to buy it. And it's got to be a reasonable price. And that's where the law of supply and demand comes in. You know, if I wanted to have a Lamborghini, I got to pay for it. And they're not going to pass them out for free. I got to pay for it. I got to earn money to pay for it.
You know, it also occurs to me, Richard, you know, we look at the other aspect. Well, we talked about the producer aspect of it. We talked about the consumer aspect of it. We talked about the systematic, the system itself. You know, Adam Smith used to talk about the invisible hand and how that would determine,
yes,
you know, what is made, right?
Yes.
But, you know, today I think we'd talk about it in terms of an engineering standpoint. We'd say, well, you know, instead of having a CPU, we get something that performs a lot better. That's a neural network. We have distributed processing of decisions. You know, when you've got this being made in a distributed way, you get much better decisions being made, don't you?
Yes. Yes, of course. You mentioned the invisible hand. I mean, that's the most important thing in what Adam Smith taught. That invisible hand, it fixes everything. Nothing is wrong. Nothing turns out wrong. They may temporarily be wrong, but they fix really quick. The invisible hand is absolutely imperative in our lives.
That's right. Because you've got a lot of, today we would say in information technology, we would say, you know, it's a learning process, right? This collective group is constantly making fine-tuning adjustments constantly. You got millions of fine-tuning aspects going on
every
here, rather
second.
Than one individual at the center trying to make these decisions. Even if they're very smart, and even if they have the best motivations, they're not going to be able to make the best decisions because they don't have sufficient information.
Yeah, you talked about Reed, Lawrence Reed, and his creation of the pencil. That pencil could not be produced without the invisible hand behind it. It could not be done. We couldn't even have a pencil. It requires that kind of cooperation. And he does such a good job of pointing out. I have a preface in one of my volumes. They gave me permission, and I have it. The concept of, and Adam Smith, you mentioned, he talked about making a pin, just a very simple pin, and everything that was behind it couldn't be done in a planned society. Why? Because they don't know what people, they don't know what to plan for. If the pencil doesn't exist, they can't plan for it.
That's right.
And that's a very important concept.
And all of those taken together is why you have the difference between North and South Korea. And it's just amazing to me that, you know, I can understand that these kids are ignorant of history and they don't know what happened with East and West Germany, that they don't know what happened with Stalinist Russia or with Maoist China. But there's no excuse for them not to know what's going on with North and South Korea. It's absolutely insane that they don't. We're out of time. I got to do a quick plug before we go to break. Thank you so much for joining us, Richard Proctor, BathroomEconomics.com. And folks, if you want to keep us on air, we really do need your support. It's one way that you can prepare for free speech in the future. But we also have a lot of products that will help you to prepare for shortages, whether it is products that are going to keep you healthy or products that are going to feed you. We got great storable food. We still have it right now. It's going to take you about 3 weeks, but it's getting delayed by the minute. So order now, InfoWarsStore.com.